things up in order to bring about his purposes?
Yeah, that marks it, the seed that, okay, I'm going to even, goes ahead here in Romans 9, uses Pharaoh as an example.
Yeah, we probably should have kept going.
So he wouldn't have been God if he couldn't have known that Pharaoh would act this way, but he didn't make him act that way.
No, he laid the choices before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh, those presentations hardened Pharaoh's heart, or you could also say Pharaoh hardened his own heart. And the Bible says both. And there we get back to that whole thing again, which I don't want to get off into that sidetrack, but it is related and connected to this, and this whole idea of God's purposes for mankind and how faith plays into here. Was there something else? Okay. Boy, it probably would be good to read and study Romans 9, but let's go back to Genesis 27:41. Rich, are you there?
No.
Would you mind reading down to the end?
So Esau bore a grudge against Jacob because of the blessings with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are near, and I will kill my brother Jacob." Now when the words of her elder son Esau were reported to Rebekah, she sent and called her younger son Jacob and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau is consoling himself concerning you by planning to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice and arise. Leave your Haran to my brother Laban. Stay with him a few days until your brother's fury subsides. So your brother's anger against you subsides and he forgets what you did to him. And then I will send and get you from there. Why should I be bereaved for both of you in one day?" Rebekah said to Isaac, "I am tired of living because of the daughters of Heth.
Mm-hmm.
If Jacob takes a wife from the daughters of Heth, like these from the daughters of the land, what good will my life be to me?"
All right. So there's a chunk that we read there, but if we focus on 46, what in the world is she referring to, the daughters of Heth? Who are they? Hittite women, yeah. Yes, if you go back to 26:34, Esau was 40 years old. He married Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite. I'm thinking those are from the sons of Heth. And Basemath, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite. And they brought grief to Isaac and Rebekah. So Rebekah is going to do exactly what Abraham and the Abraham servant did, send Isaac away to the relatives up there in Haran, up north. But she's doing this, she approaches Isaac this way. That's where he got her, Rebekah. You're approaching Isaac this way, mainly to save Jacob. But it's just interesting. It's a little side note how, again, the characteristics and the character of Esau, not caring about the relationship and the covenant that they have with the Lord, apparently, and marries these outside women, and they, true to the word, choices and consequences, they bring grief to Isaac and Rebekah. Yes. In verse 28, chapter 28.
Yeah, he doubles down on that and marries two more.
Yeah, from Ishmael. Dad and I were talking about this last week. And Kelly's referring to chapter 28, verses 6 through 9, when Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob. So he goes and takes women. He saw that the daughters of Canaan displeased his father, and he went to Ishmael. So I'm wondering if he's trying to make some sorts of amends because Ishmael is related to Abraham? Or is he just being totally rebellious here and saying, could go either way? But he marries more people that aren't from the directly. Well, Ishmaelites are from Abraham. So
they're
not the children of the promised son, Paul.
It's interesting. You were talking about people's attitudes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That I hadn't really thought of that. I hadn't picked up on that. Then I'll send and get you from there. She's trying to save him. Yeah, but placing the blame on Jacob, it sounds like. Yeah, interesting point. So let's see. Kyle, let's move into 28. Chapter 28:10. Kyle, could you read 10 down through 16?
Jacob left the town of Beersheba and started out for Haran. At sunset, he stopped for the night and went to sleep, resting his head on a large rock. In a dream, he saw a ladder that reached from earth to heaven, and God's angels were going up and down on it. The Lord was standing beside the ladder and said, "I am the Lord God, who was worshipped by Abraham and Isaac. I will give to you and your family the land on which you are now sleeping. Your descendants will spread over the earth in all directions and will become as numerous as the speck of dust. Your family will be a blessing to all people. Wherever you go, I will watch over you. Then later I will bring you back to this land. I won't leave you. I will do all that I have promised."
Yeah, thank you. And Jacob woke up from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." Does this sound familiar, what the Lord is saying in this dream? This is Jacob. This is Jacob's grandfather. We read last week these promises given to Isaac, related to Isaac. And again, like I said last week, if you think this is boring study, boring book, don't know what this has to do with any of us, you're in it right here. To a certain extent and a certain degree, you are in it. And in our talk this morning, sermon, I'll explain that a little more. If you care to know, you can turn your ears off or you can listen and check me out on that. All right? Is this, so this is important. This is God's, this isn't just, this is a cute little event where Jacob has a cute little dream about a cute little ladder. And these are cute little promises. No. This is God at work. People. Question is, do you and I believe it? We are sons of Abraham, how? By faith. That's how important faith is in understanding what faith is. That complete, all-out trust in Him, which causes us to want to serve Him and do what He says, which is obedience. Dad.
If I understand you right, you're saying that the ladder is illegal, sending represents the promises of God?
No, because I hadn't really touched on the ladder. I was referring to the promises themselves, where the Lord's, verse 13, the Lord standing above it and saying, "I'm the God of your father Abraham, and you on the land," here's the land promise, verse 13, and then there's the descendant promise in verse 14. your descendants will be like the dust of the earth. And there's the third part in, at the end of 14. In you and your descendants shall all the families of the earth be blessed.
Well, I guess I was just thinking that those poems that were
written
by the ladder.
No, I wasn't going there. But we can focus on the ladder a little bit. Is there anywhere else in our Bibles where this image comes up? Maybe in a different context.
Brian, yeah. I'm wondering what I'm kind of getting with that, with the angels going up and down, it's like a continual. It's continuation.
It is that.
The eternal is just, it's just like a veil or something.
From heaven to what? From heaven to what? Mm-hmm. Earth, mm-hmm. Where mankind dwells. So there is probably some symbolism there. Connection of man to God.
And the blessings of
everything. Yes, of course, we're reading into that because it doesn't pause and tell us this is what this means. But let's we can put our thumbs in Genesis 28 there and go to John, Book of John, New Testament. John, the first chapter. And verse 51. John chapter 1. Let's begin with 49. Nathanael answered him, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. Jesus answered and said to him, Because I said to you that I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You will see greater things than these. And he said to him, Jesus said to him, Truly, I say to you, you will see the heavens opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. Now, without studying the book of John, how is Nathanael going to see that happen? Okay, we will move on. Nobody knows. I'm not even saying I know the answer. We do know in a literal sense. There was that occasion where Jesus is out in the wilderness and angels ministered to him. But I'm thinking this is more of a broad sense. The picture of Emmanuel, that's Jesus, coming down to earth and restoring, kind of what Joe was getting at, restoring fellowship with all mankind. Even with all of our flaws and sins, just like Jacob, a flawed man, but heaven coming down to him and working through him, through the promises. So this restored fellowship. Anything to add to that, or disagree, or agree, or... In Genesis?
Yeah. Talk
yep.
About Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
Angels were messengers. So they're coming down, giving Jacob a message, going back. Jacob calls this place Bethel,
mm-hmm.
which means house of God. He understood God had come down in his house, as it were, mm-hmm. and talked with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a message.
Mm-hmm.
That's as far as I can go. As far as, I don't know if that's so.
And maybe it's not appropriate to connect it with John 1:51. It's just that Jesus uses that figure. You will see the heavens open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. And in his case, Jesus the Messiah, did he make the entrance to heaven available? Did Jesus make the way, the entrance to heaven available for me? Yeah. So if we want to look at that in that general aspect, I think that's kind of fascinating. It's kind of the same figure later when Jesus dies and the veil of the temple is torn in two from top to bottom. There's a lot of symbolism and representation going on there, isn't there? In regards to the temple and all its practices and things being set aside, and here's the new high priest, access to heaven. Kelly and then Joe.
Well,
Which chapter are we in?
Genesis 28.
Okay, so Kelly's taking us back to Genesis 28, 17.
Mm-hmm. This is piggybacking on what Dad said. Jacob was afraid, and he said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven."
Mm-hmm.
And I got to thinking that Jesus called himself the way, and it's talked about as a path or the entrance into heaven, so I think that connection is valid.
The way and the path to heaven. This is the gate of heaven. Okay, that's something to chew on too.
Access to God.
Yes. Yep. That's what we're talking about. That's possibly what we're talking about here.
Well, the angel is sitting and descending on the Son of Man, it says in John.
Yes.
And of course, Jesus would be
the access to God in Jesus' case. Correct. Correct. I think what we're seeing here is Jacob's beginning to trust in God. All right, and he sets up a pillar and he gives a tenth. He wanted to do something special for God. But I think from here on we're seeing the conniver, the supplanter, the usurper, his attitude's going to change. And he's going to reap the consequences of some of his actions, isn't he, and his behavior. In chapter 29, somebody summarize that for me. What's going on in 29? I love it when you guys read to me. It's kind of like being read to at bedtime, but it's too long of a chapter. What's going on in 29? Steve? Oh, go ahead. 20 to 28? Sure. Yeah. Don't let me rush through some things if there's some application or whatever. Okay, I'm in the New American also.
28:20.
Okay.
Then Jacob made a vow saying, "If God will be with me and I'll keep me on the journey that I take, and I will give thee food, deeds, and garments to wear, and I return to my father's house and say, then the Lord will be my God." Well, that's like me saying, well, if you'll buy me lunch every day and feed you, you'll be my best friend.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like that, doesn't it?
It does.
And before we get to those other translations, is he asking for a blessing here, basically, in verse 20? If God will do these things. Those are basically blessings.
God already promised that, though.
He is asking for a blessing.
God promised him exactly that.
Hang on a minute. This blessing that he's asking for, didn't he already steal it? He stole the blessing. Is his conscience maybe bothering him here? I stole the blessing. Did I really get it? I want confirmation directly from God. I did what I thought I needed to do to get it. And he got the blessing from Isaac. I want confirmation from God. Let's have, I see you, Joe. Kelly had a connection here. Where? What verse?
Message at the ladder. Like up in 14.
Okay. How does the NIV read on verse 20?
Not too differently. If God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey, will give me food, blah, 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 so I return safely, and then the Lord will be my God.
Yeah, very similar. Any other? It does sound like a demand, but or a conditional statement. But I don't, sometimes the way human beings interacted with the Lord shocks us sometimes, but think about what Abraham talking with the Lord before Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, and Moses interceding for the Lord, saying, "Lord, if you do this in your anger, wipe out this people. You know, here's the consequences." I'm kind of seeing that. Maybe there's some total different thought. We had Joe, and then. That could be.
That's more my thought. I hadn't thought it the way Steve Teeth, maybe completely right in what he said too, but if
following through with the fact that he did steal that blessing from Isaac, kind of make it legitimizing
the word
his theft.
The word "if" sometimes throws us. It doesn't like me always mean this will happen, then this will happen.
Doesn't always mean a conditional thing. Yeah. Is that an auction signal, Kramer, or you actually have a thought?
No, I don't have a number.
Sometimes it's, you know.
Yeah, no,
okay, go ahead.
And so it's really, there's no commentary on this afterwards from the scripture.
Nope.
It would be very easy to maybe assume that you're kind of going to say, well, if Jesus do these things and do these things, well, but I don't take it that way because he did this in fear. He was afraid.
Yep.
And so it's almost like he's just, he's making a vow.
Yep.
And whenever you have a vow, it's kind of two sides to every vow. And
covenant, too. Yeah, and he's under a covenant right here. When you say I did these things, you referring to like stealing the blessing?
Oh.
The stealing, the blessing.
No,
that's where I think might be maybe part of the fear is, you know, this is what I did.
The fear is from the dream you just had.
Yep. Yep. No, we don't. Yep. So there's another good input. All right.
One other thing, Brian.
Yes.
Jacob is so awestruck by what happened.
Mm-hmm.
He promises God this did. Am I correct? And I didn't read it far ahead. When he came back, he wrestled with God.
Yes. Yep.
He may be wrestling with what's going on, and he's, as Patrick said, there's a fear here in his mind, not afraid fear, but...
And that meant, go ahead, not afraid fear, but like respect.
This is an awesome place.
Yep.
There, verse 17, this is the gate of heaven. He was awestruck.
Total respect here. Mm-hmm. And that man later on is going to change his name to mean strive or rule or have power with God. We'll touch on that later. So what happens in 29? He gets a little of his own medicine. Carmen, have you read this chapter? Summarize what goes on here, please. Yeah. Once he finds out that he's married to Leah, he confronts Laban with it. And I believe they're given a week, and then he is able to marry Rachel, but he has to work another 7. And then Laban still doesn't want to go. It ends up being almost 20 years that he is gone from the land of Canaan where Isaac and Rebekah were living until he comes back. Genesis 29, I highlighted 30. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban for another 7 years. Now the Lord saw that Leah was unloved and opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Then she conceived again. Who is this? She, Leah, in verse 33. And she conceived again in verse 34. Pretty interesting, huh? The Lord opens Leah's womb. Now, is this all demonstrating Jehovah's compassion in any way?
Towards Leah?
Yeah. Yeah, that was important in this culture, and especially with this promise of descendants and great nation. I don't know if that's bearing on their thoughts. It's more on Abraham's side of the family, but notice how she names these boys. She conceived again in 33 and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. So she named him Simeon. Where does she give birth to Reuben? He's first, 32. Leah conceived and bore a son, named him Reuben, for she said, because the Lord has seen my affliction, surely now my husband will love me. Notice how as she gives birth, she automatically goes to that thought of being unloved. Surely my husband will love me now. Giving birth to another son. 34, she conceived again and said, this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons. Therefore, she named him Levi. It is sad. It's all revolving around how she absolutely notices and knows how unloved she is, or loved less than Rachel. And Rachel is going to have one son, Joseph, whose descendants will be more numerous than all the other tribes, because he's got two tribes from him, Ephraim and Manasseh, and they're going to have a lot of land. And Leah, on the other hand, she's going to have a son named Judah. And who's coming through that lineage? Jesus. That's right. Whose descendants will be kings, Judah's descendants, and become the lineage of the Messiah. And Leah will have a son whose descendants will be the priesthood. Which one was that? Levi. That's right. Jehovah can relate to how Leah felt, because she played second fiddle, right? Pretty much.
That wasn't by her choice. That was what her dad did.
Yep.
She was first born.
Yep. And Laban said, we can't marry off our second daughter without marrying off the first one. So he did the little tricky thing there.
Why is it tricky?
It was their custom thing. I know. That injustice frosts your cake, doesn't it, Gail? Yeah, I know it.
You know why? Because it happened to me. That's why.
Okay, so you're relating here. You're relating. Okay. I never know when the scriptures are going to really touch somebody and bring out emotion. Oh, yeah, so Jehovah. So let's put ourselves in Jehovah's shoes. This is what I'm getting at here. I love to have takeaway and application. Over and over, as we read through the Old Testament and mankind's history, God has been pleading with mankind, I want first place in your life. Is that accurate to say? That's Jehovah. And over, mankind's been saying, well, I'll give you some attention, and I'll give you some service, and I'll give you some worship, but overall, the allurements of the world are grabbing my attention, and ultimately, they're my primary concern. Does that summarize the history of mankind? Pretty much. God knows how Leah felt. God said, I am a jealous God. That's why in the Moses' Ten Commandments, he says, thou shalt not worship any other god before me, because I'm a jealous God. I love you. I love the ones I made and created. For example, That's why covetousness in the law of Moses was wrong. It's idolatry. And then there's Esau's example, despising his birthright and being profane, not caring about God. Yes.
Why did Esau despise his birthright?
Were you here last week?
Yep.
We touched on his whole attitude of being profane, making things common. He made that birthright common. The why in his own mind, it's not revealed to us, but his behavior and his attitude of not making it important. Remember, we were stressing that this handing down of material possessions and the inheritance, the firstborn would get more than the rest. It's not just that, but in this family, it's that whole idea of covenant relationship with God and faith. And Esau's despising that just because of his attitude of sweeping it under the carpet.
So why?
There's that. He wanted to be satisfied now.
Now. He was short term. Remember, we're talking about short term and long term?
So why did how did his brother think he could take the birthright? Because you can't take somebody being firstborn. You can't do it.
I know, but well, he sold it. Esau sold it. In their culture, that was transferring. And Jacob knew that. Jacob is a supplanter and the deceit conniver, and he did it.
His mother knew that too.
Well, she's talking about the birthright.
Well, I know, but his mother.
And the blessing. Yeah. His mother's involved in stealing the blessing, right? Yeah. Same thing, both of those together. Mitch.
Rebecca's plot with Jacob basically undermining Isaac's intent to give up. And knowing that later, it seems to me Isaac knew that he was deceived by Jacob.
Yes, he found out. He's very angry.
Being that Isaac was deceived, to me, if it was me in this situation, I would have reversed that birthright and given it back to Esau because of that.
Yeah. I know. We probably would have tried to do that. In their culture, it's etched in stone.
Yeah, when I say so.
It's an oath, yeah. Yep. And that was their attitude in that culture. And with covenants, they took them seriously. Let's get back to Leah here. In the application, remember, we're made in God's own image. He has emotions and feelings. And we can please him or we can break his heart when we sin and when we betray him. And when we fail to give him purity of heart and purity of commitment. So Jacob loved Leah, but he did not love her very much or love her first. He just wasn't enthralled with her. He was enthralled with Rachel. She's the one that caught his eye. She was his favorite. This is Jacob I'm talking about. Leah gets the leftovers. And this loved less is exactly what Jehovah endured throughout most of recorded history, is Jehovah being loved less by mankind. What did Jesus say? Matthew 10:37, he who loves mom, dad, daughter, son more than me isn't worthy of me. This is a hyperbole. You need to hate them, love them less than me. He wants to be, desires to be first, and he does not show favoritism. That's important to remember. So the issue is not, do you love God? The issue is, do you love God like Jacob loved Leah, or do you love God like Jacob loved Rachel? Get that, the lesson we're driving at here? Is he your favorite? Is Jehovah God your favorite? This is the first and greatest commandment. Love the Lord your God with everything. Love your neighbor as yourself. Okay. packing in a little bit of application. When you first read that chapter, and maybe we're drawing out of it something that's not there, but I think in God's wisdom, in a story like this, there's always, usually, something that can apply to us. And so here's a specific love triangle, but really there's lessons in here that we can learn about. And if nothing else, maybe some compassion towards Leah. It says her eyes were weak. Really, that means she was homely looking. Rachel was beautiful. Leah was homely looking. Jacob, being a testosterone conveyor, looked towards Rachel and chose her. But think about those lessons, comparing God's attitude towards Leah and his compassion on her. And mankind, does mankind love God first or tend to love God last? Wrap it up, Lysander, because we got to close. It's 20 after.
Okay, did I miss something? I guess I didn't read where it said she was. I know the Bible uses comely.
Yep, that's what I'm talking about. Yep.
Okay.
Somebody can find the verse and tell you where it says that. First of all, I'm in the wrong chapter, but 29 what?
17.
29, 17. Yep.
I'll read it.
Okay, there it is. All right, thank you for your attention. We're done. Class dismissed.